Planning and Zoning Commission to order. I'd like to thank everyone for joining us this evening in these unprecedented times. This meeting is taking place online to comply with the ongoing social distancing requirements and to ensure the community's ability to participate. Mrs. Ancona, can I please get a roll call of the commissioners?
Chair Gamble?
Here.
Vice Chair Harrington? Commissioner Bergsma? Commissioner Bergsma?
Shoot. I'm here.
Okay,
we got you.
Okay.
Commissioner Hurst? Commissioner Hong?
Here.
Commissioner Posey? Commissioner Sturman?
Here.
Let the record show we have a quorum.
All right, thank you. And Jacob, Commissioner Jacob Harrington also just entered the meeting as well. Please let the record reflect that.
Thank you.
Or Vice Chair Harrington. All right, so things are gonna be done a little bit differently. For all of you that are joining us right now, we have all of the videos and all of your speakers are currently muted. This is just how the Zoom meeting is going to work. We have spots where we're going to open it up and have people talk, but first I'd like to start the meeting by saying the Pledge of Allegiance, and if you guys can all just listen, with the technology the way it is, we aren't able to all say it together, so I will be doing that. I pledge, are we going to put a picture of the flag up?
Yes. Chair Gamble, yes, give me just a sec.
Okay, thanks. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. All right, so I'd just like to thank everyone again for joining us remotely. Clearly, the mechanics of tonight's meeting are going to be a little bit different than our in-person meetings. The format is going to remain the same as far as the agenda and going through that. But obviously participation is going to be a little bit different. So in terms of some housekeeping items before we get started, I wanted to help familiarize everybody with the Zoom application. So in order to participate, one must be logged into the Zoom app directly by a computer or by a phone. There was a phone number that you were able to call in to participate. So for those of you that are unfamiliar with this, myself, Mr. Spaeth, and then also the town's attorney, Mr. Joe Andrews' microphones will be on for the entire meeting while everybody else's will be muted. And only Mr. Spaeth can turn on your microphone. So when you have a question, we will turn your microphone on and then you will need to make sure you are also unmuted on your side. So there's two mutes. We control the entire meeting and then you control your personal mute. So you will need to click, it's usually just in the bottom left-hand corner. There's a little microphone icon. You'll just wanna make sure that it's not clicked red. So you'll be able to speak. So in order to speak, if you'd like to address the commission on one of our agenda items or in the call to the audience, I'm going to have people raise their hand, but not in a traditional sense like this. If you kind of hover your mouse towards the bottom of the screen, if you're on your computer or on a laptop, tablet, there is a participants icon. If you click on that participant icon, it's going to bring up a list of everybody who's in this meeting. In the bottom right-hand corner of that participant box, there is a button that says raise hand. So if everybody just kind of wants to see if they can see that, if you're on a tablet or a computer, find that, locate it. If you are calling in from a phone and you would like to participate in a question, you're going to need to press *9, and then that will notify us that you have raised your hand, and then we will get a list of all the people that have raised their hands, and we will be able to go through that. And I'm going to ask that you only raise your hand when we are on the specific agenda item you would like to make a comment about. So please don't raise your hand for agenda item number 4 when we're on agenda item number 1. Please wait until we get to that agenda item, just so we keep everything running smooth and efficiently. All right, so once your hand is raised, I will call on you to speak. Mr. Spaeth will unmute you. Just like all of our other commission meetings, we ask that you clearly state your first and last name and whether or not you are a resident of Oro Valley. And we will also have a 3-minute time limit, as we do in our in-person meetings as well. And we have got a timer for that as well. So, as with all the meetings, we've got our 3-minute timer, and we ask that you respect that. And then we also ask that the commissioners raise their hand when they would like to comment during those open discussion times as well. All right, so with all of that being said, I'd like to do our call to the audience. And during this time, any member of the public is allowed to address the commission on any issue not listed on today's agenda. Pursuant to the Arizona Open Meeting Law, individual commission members may ask town staff to review the matter, ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda item, or respond to criticism made by speakers. However, the commission may not discuss matters raised during call to the audience. So if you wish to address the commission on a matter not on this agenda, please notify us now by clicking the raise hand button on your computer or pressing *9 on your phone now. So there's going to be a few just awkward pauses as we kind of proceed here. I'm not seeing any. We'll give you a little bit of time to raise hands. Mr. Spaeth, are you seeing any hands?
Chair Gamble, I'm not.
Okay. Well, then I'm going to assume that there are no call to the audience items, and I'm going to close the call to the audience. I'd like to now welcome our council members. We have Vice Mayor Barrett that's with us. I also see Councilman Rodman. And am I meeting? Sorry, I'm scrolling through the list. Is there anybody else here? I think this just those two. So welcome. We're glad to have you here. I'd like to turn a little bit of time over to Vice Mayor Barrett for the council liaison comments. So Melanie, can you unmute her, and then you can proceed.
Yes. Hi, thank you. It's nice to see all your faces, even if it is from a social distance. There's just a couple of planning items that we can address regarding what the council's done on March 4th. The council approved the Rancho Vistoso Center PAD amendment to allow a landscaped buffer yard with the conditions added by the Planning and Zoning Commission. And on April 1st, we approved a conceptual art for Push Ridge Christian Academy, which was also recommended by the Planning and Zoning Commission. And as you'll probably be aware, after that, we haven't had other council meetings because of the COVID-19 crisis. And I do want to update the commission and the community that the town has been working really hard, and our planning department in particular, as well as our police department and several others, have been working to make accommodations to and adjustments to deal with this interesting and different situation that we find ourselves in. I've been very impressed with our police chief. She's been doing a great job, and our town manager. And we, as the council, we've been able to receive updates regularly. Our hearts have really been with all of our community members at this time. And I know that the entire council has really been putting the community at the forefront of their thoughts as we've gone throughout this situation. And I did want to comment that at this point, we do get a number of emails asking us about this. And at this point, when the governor makes an executive order, then that sort of supersedes the executive orders of towns and cities and things like that. So at this point, all eyes are on the governor in terms of the direction that he's moving. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to have an update, and I look forward to a productive meeting. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Vice Mayor Barrett. All right, we are going to proceed with the agenda. Ms. Ancona, will you please read our first item?
Review and approval of the March 3rd, 2020 regular session meeting minutes.
All right, could I get a motion to approve that by the raise of the hand? All right, Hal, can you put forth a motion?
Yes, I move to approve the March 3rd, 2020 meeting minutes.
All right, and then can I get a second? Commissioner Harrington, Vice Chair Harrington?
I'll second that motion.
All right, and then because of the Zoom meetings, we'll be doing a roll call vote. So Ms. Ancona can record everything correctly. So Ms. Ancona, can you please do a roll call vote? And Mr. Spaeth, will you just unmute all of the commissioners for that?
Okay, Chair Gamble?
Aye.
Vice Chair Harrington?
Aye.
Commissioner Bergsma?
Aye.
Commissioner Hurst?
Aye.
Commissioner Hong?
Aye.
Commissioner Posey?
Chair Gamble, can you ask Commissioner Posey to unmute her end?
Commissioner Posey, you are muted on your end. Can you select the, in the bottom left-hand corner, the mute button?
Got it. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Aye.
Thank you. Commissioner Sturman?
Aye.
Motion passes 7-0.
All right, thank you. Ms. Ancona, if you could please read out agenda item number 2.
Discussion and possible action to permit a monument sign in the right-of-way of Tangerine Road for the St. Mark Church located at 2727 West Tangerine Road.
All right, thank you. I'm gonna turn the time over to Mr. Spaeth. Please proceed with the staff presentation. I believe he's going to be putting a PowerPoint up, and then he will introduce the staff members that will be presenting.
Thank you, Chair Gamble. Yes, we have Ms. Patty Hayes with the Town of Laurel Valley. going to give the staff presentation, and let me just get to it. Give me just a sec.
Thank you, Mr. Spee. Can everyone hear me? All right, my name is Patty Hayes. I'm with the Town Planning and Zoning Division. And if we can move to the first slide of the presentation, please. Thank you. Our purpose for this case tonight is to review the location of a proposed monument sign for the St. Mark Church. This case is related only to the location of the monument sign and is not related to the design of the sign. For properties that are single occupancy businesses, like a church, the sign design, including height and size, are examined through a building permit, which is reviewed administratively by staff. So again, we're only looking at the location of this sign. A monument sign is a permanent structure built on the ground that is used to identify a property, much like we see in the photo on the right. Usually, monument signs are placed on the private property that the sign identifies. But in 2019, Town Council approved a zoning code change that provides an opportunity for some properties to move their monument signs in the right-of-way under very specific standards. That code change was approved because the town recognized that some right-of-ways are so large that some properties could have problems with signage and wayfinding. As a matter of fact, this St. Mark property was the example case that we used for that code amendment. We used some of the same photos for that 2019 code change that you'll see tonight in this presentation. This case tonight is to review the location standards of the proposed sign in the right-of-way, which is a recommendation by the Planning Commission for final decision by Town Council. Next slide, please. First, let's get oriented as to the location of this project. The St. Mark Church, outlined in yellow, is located on the south side of Tangerine Road, west of LaToya Boulevard, at the corner of Shannon Road, on the western town boundary line. Next slide, please. A closer view of the St. Mark property shows us that the property line is significantly set back from the paved travel lanes of Tangerine Road. There is generally about 120 feet of right-of-way land between the St. Mark property line, shown in yellow, and the nearest travel lane of Tangerine Road. The right-of-way land is owned by the town and contains the road, multi-use path, landscaping, and natural desert. Usually, a monument sign would only be allowed on the private property, which is shown by the blue star. As you can see, a sign located where the blue star is shown is set back very far from the paved road, which makes visibility of the sign difficult. Next slide, please. A sign located in the right-of-way, shown by the green star, would provide better visibility to motorists. Due to the zoning code change that was approved in 2019 that I mentioned earlier, applicants may request approval of the commission and council to move their sign in the right-of-way under specific circumstances. Next slide, please. Those circumstances include an extra deep right-of-way between the paved surface of the road and the private property line. Usually 100 feet is required. In this case, there is at least 120 foot distance. The sign would also have to be in a location that would provide safe wayfinding while not obstructing site visibility of traffic. The sign must also be located close to the entrance of the property and contain no electronic messages. The proposed sign location meets all of the standards and has been reviewed and approved by the town's engineer. Next slide, please. And as always, we look to the plan, the general plan's goals and policies, which directs us to look at the built environment and character of the town, while updating signage regulations to emphasize identification and direction without intrusive signs. Staff finds that the proposed sign location meets the general plan standards by providing safe identification without intrusiveness. Next slide, please. Staff, including the town engineer, finds that the proposed sign location meets the general plan and zoning code location standards and therefore is recommended for approval. Again, we are only looking at the location of the sign and not the design of the sign in this case. The applicant has also joined us online tonight with a presentation and is available to answer your questions. And that concludes my presentation.
All right, thank you, Ms. Hayes. Mr. Spaeth, will you please load the applicant's presentation and introduce them?
Yes, Chair Gamble, maybe just a sec. The applicant, Mr. Mitch Lorenz, is with us this evening.
Okay.
And we do have a presentation as well that I will put on the screen in just a second. Make sure he's not muted. I tried to unmute him. I think I did.
I think I'm unmuted now.
Oh, there we go. All right.
Yeah, we can hear you.
All right. Thank you. Hello, my name is Mitch Lorenz. I've been the owner's rep and project manager for the St. Mark Catholic Church ever since, June of 2010 when the church was going through rezoning and all of the different various phases and additions that have been done throughout that time span up until now. Well, thank you for the introduction, and I appreciate the time, Chair Gamble and the other commissioners. And it looks like the presentation is uploaded, and Michael, if you could go to the next slide, and we'll find that a lot of this information that I'm going to go through is was already covered very well by Patty. So anything that's a bit repetitive, I'll just kind of go through quickly, and we can address any questions as they come up or at the end. As Patty said, the property line is set back quite a distance. We dedicated 100 feet when we went through rezoning, and the sign is 120 feet from the end of the median, which is quite a bit of distance and is fully obscured by vegetation traveling in either direction, eastbound and westbound, as you're going along Tangerine. And as the sign is really only visible for a split second while you're at the intersection going eastbound on Tangerine while you're at Shannon Road. And if you are stopped there, which very rarely will be, you can see it, but it's again obscured quite a bit from the existing vegetation that's there. And some of that vegetation was just naturally occurring, and a lot of it was planted when the road widening project was done. So we had trees and plants there, and then some new trees and plants got put in place that further obscured it. Can you see me okay?
Yep.
Okay, bear with me a second. I lost my screen. Okay, I'm sorry about that. So as part of this request, we're asking the commission to allow us to put our sign out into the median, well within the right of way, and as Patty explained, we're putting it or requesting it in a place that is within the allowed ordinance, with the new ordinance. And when we put the new sign out into the median, we will remove the old sign, as well as there's a just a temporary sign that's there as well, and we'll remove all of that. The new sign would be about 20 feet from the. I'm sorry, I just keep losing my screen. We'll be about 20 feet from the end of the median. which would allow for very clear visibility from either direction. And we'll see some images that that describe that pretty well. It doesn't interfere with any site visibility, viewing angles as you're pulling in and out of the driveway of the church. And having the sign clearly prominent in the middle of the median will give us a very clear defined wayfinding for the entrance to the church. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. There you go. Thank you. We can just very clearly, Patty described this quite well. You know, this gives us another idea of just how deep the setback is from the main road. Next slide, please. And this slide here gives us some images that tie to the next three slides. And you'll see, starting from the left, you'll see A, B, and C. And the following slides and photographs will give us some indications of the visibility of the new sign and how the existing sign is obstructed. So go to the next slide, please. So this is from the intersection of Shannon Road looking eastbound. And you'll see the notations there pointing to where the existing sign is, clearly hidden behind the vegetation. Which is actually a photograph that was taken off of Google Maps, which is much older. So there's more vegetation and more growth there as it sits now. You can see where the Welcome to Oral Valley sign is. And then the orange box that's, more in line with the line of sight along Tangerine Road is where the proposed sign would be. So go to the next slide, please, Michael. So this gives a little bit closer view, getting closer to the Welcome to Oral Valley sign. You can see where the orange box, the new proposed sign location becomes much more visible. Drivers are going to be able to identify that and know that they're supposed to turn into the church if they're not familiar with the church entry. And again, you can see where the, looking through some of the vegetation there to the left of that power pole, and a little bit behind that, you can see where the existing sign is, and it's, clearly, obstructed by the vegetation. So next slide, please. So this would be more or less in line with the Oral Valley sign as you're getting ready to go into the deceleration lane and turn into the church parking lot, giving you an idea of the prominence of the proposed new sign. And again, it's about 20 feet from the end of the median, centered within the median, and it's a double face sign. So you're going to see that that image there on both sides of the sign, eastbound and westbound traffic as they're coming in. Next slide, please. This is just the design information for the sign. I know we're not talking about that, but I wanted to add this image in just in case there was any kind of questions about height and width of the sign and how the sign copy read. Next slide, please. And this is just, again, more informational than anything. It's a blow up of the median. And this came from the roadway improvement plans. Just to give you an idea that, the property line from the end of the median is 120 feet. You can see where the existing sign is in red. The new sign would be in the orange, and identifying the dimensional information within that that blowed up site plan there. And again, the center line and half right of way width for Tangerine Road's property line is 175 feet to the center line of the road. To the end of the median, again, is 120 feet. So it's still quite a bit of a distance back. So we really feel that having the sign in the new location really creates a much safer driving condition, wayfinding condition for pedestrians and drivers. And if we can go to the next slide, please, Michael. And we feel like we've met the ordinance requirements in terms of placement of the sign, height and size of the sign. And we feel like this creates a much safer driving condition and wayfinding condition for the parishioners and for the public in general. With that, I can take any questions.
All right, so at this time, we're going to open up questioning to the applicant and staff for the commissioners only. So if any of the commissioners have questions, if they can raise their hand now, and then we'll unmute you and allow you to ask your questions. And Mr. Spaeth will direct questions as he sees fit and unmute anyone who needs to be unmuted.
Chair Gamble, Vice Chair Harrington has a question.
All right, Vice Chair Harrington.
The question for the applicant, is the sign going to be lighted or no? And is the previous sign where the current location is it lit now?
Hi, Vice Chair Harrington. Yes and yes. There is power to the existing sign, and what we would do is extend that conduit to the new sign location. And we are looking at a couple of different lighting opportunities. One would be an internally lit sign or backlit letters. And then another option that I've discussed with the sign contractor is a possibility for a solar solution for lighting. But even if we went with solar, I believe I would still want to extend the conduit there just so we would have it.
Did that answer your question?
Oh, geez. All right.
Yes, it did answer my question. Thank you very much.
Wonderful. Did we have any other questions or comments from any of the other commissioners?
Chair Gamble, Commissioner Posey, and Commissioner Hong have questions.
All right. Will you please unmute Commissioner Posey first?
Okay, there you go. All right, thank you. First of all, I just want to say the location that you're at is an awesome location, speaking from, you know, a business sense or whatever. It's an awesome location, and the church speaks for itself. So you're off to a good start there, and the sign looks good and everything. And I just want to make the point that I read here that there will be an agreement between the town of Oro Valley and the applicant that if they need to relocate the sign for some reason, that it will be at the church's expense, and that if something should come up. Is that right, Mr. Spaeth?
Mr. Spaeth, can Mrs. Hayes answer that?
Chair Gamble, yes, I will turn it over to Ms. Hayes.
Commissioner Posey, thank you for the question. Yes, so anyone who gets approval to place a fine in the right of way has to sign a license agreement with the town, saying that they will be responsible for either having to relocate or remove the sign if needed, or in the future work on the roadway at the church's expense, not the town's expense.
Okay, so that's standard then?
That is very standard, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Can we please move on to Commissioner Hong? Will you unmute her? Here we go.
I just have a general question. I read through, and it's a lot of information in there. But my understanding at this point is that the basic difference between the previous and proposed signage are the location and possible design height and dimension of it. Is this correct, or do you want to, whoever can, clarify as to what exact differences are there and so forth? Thank you.
Commissioner Hahn, so what we're looking at tonight is location only. We're not looking at anything to do with the design, but so far the design they've proposed, it meets all of our code standards. But so the difference between existing sign and the new sign, quite frankly, the new sign will be a probably built a little bit better than the existing one they have. The existing one's been there a while. So the new sign will be meet the code standards and just be in the right of way, no difference, no difference in the location.
Okay, thank you.
All right, did that answer your question, Commissioner Hahn?
Yes.
Okay, wonderful. All right, if we could move on to Commissioner Sturman, will you please unmute him?
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Chair McGamble. This is a question. I've really been interested in the scenic corridor. Now, is this within the scenic corridor guidelines, or is there a scenic corridor along that that area?
Commissioner Herman, there is a Tangerine Overlay District, and it does not address signage in that area.
Okay.
Does that answer your question? Okay. Do we have any other questions from commissioners?
Chair Gamble, I do not see any additional questions.
Okay. So then at this point, I would like to open the public hearing, and if any members of the public wish to speak on this specific agenda item, now is the time to do so. So if you could either press the raise hand button or *9 if you are on a telephone to raise your hand. We'll give you a little bit of time to do that. All right, I'm not seeing anybody. Are you seeing anybody?
Chair Gamble, I don't see any questions.
Okay, then I will close the public hearing. To this and open it to discussion for commission members only. So if any commission members wanted to discuss, please raise your hand or push the raise hand button. No, all right. Well, at this time then I'd like to call for a motion. Will you please unmute Commissioner Posey? All right, Commissioner Posey.
Yes, thank you. I'd like to move to recommend approval of the proposed right-of-way sign location for St. Mark Church based on the finding that it meets the standards of the zoning code.
All right, can I get a second?
I second it.
All right. All right, thank you. Ms. Ancona, can you please do a roll call? And Mr. Spaeth, if you could unmute all of the commissioners.
Okay. It's Chair Gable, I think we're good.
All right, Ms. Ancona.
Okay, Chair Gamble.
Aye.
Vice Chair Harrington?
Aye.
Commissioner Bergsma?
Aye.
Commissioner Hurst?
No, we missed one. Sorry. Go ahead.
Aye.
Okay. Commissioner Hong?
Aye.
Commissioner Posey?
Aye.
Commissioner Sturman?
Aye.
Motion passes 7-0.
All right, wonderful. So Mr. Spaeth, please mute everyone again. And Ms. Ancona, will you please read out the second agenda item?
Okay. Discussion and possible action regarding a master sign program for the property known as 2 Oracle Place, located at 7315 North Oracle Road.
All right, thank you. Mr. Spaeth, can you please proceed with the staff presentation and introduce who will be presenting that?
Thank you, Chair Gamble, members of the commission. Ms. Patty Hayes is going to give the staff presentation again. She should be good to go. Let me pull up the presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Spaeth. Let's move forward to the next slide, please, and we'll get started.
What did I do? Sorry.
Thank you. So the purpose for this next case is the review of a new master sign program for the property known as 2 Oracle Place. Each one of our commercial properties is required to establish a set of sign standards specific to the development. In this case, a master sign program is proposed, which allows a little more latitude, as warranted, to the zoning code for unique circumstances, which then enable better sign design. In this case, we are reviewing the design of signs, which is different than the first case we looked at tonight. The Planning and Zoning Commission is the recommending body for a master sign program with final decision by council. Before we get into the details about this specific case, let's get oriented to the location of this project. Next slide, please. The subject property, which is outlined in yellow, is located on the east side of Oracle Road, approximately a quarter mile north of Einar Road. Immediately west is Tohono O'Toole Park, shown in green, and north is the Family Life radio station, and south is Bank of the West. Across the street to the east, on the other side of the town boundary line, which is shown in blue, where the Coco's restaurant is located, is in Pima County's jurisdiction. Next slide, please. The master sign program is meant to show us how all signs are intended to be used on the property, such as the signs that we see on this slide. But tonight we're going to focus on the monument and wall signs for this development. Next slide, please. There are new entryway and monument signs proposed for the development, along with a remodeled existing sign. I'll go over each of these signs individually in just a moment, but first let's look at where all these signs will be located. Next slide. On this slide, the green lines point to the locations of the proposed signs that we'll talk about tonight. The black lines point to existing monument signs that will remain in place without any changes, since those are owned by someone else. Although the outlined area in yellow is the primary focus of this master sign program, which belongs to 2 Oracle Place, all three buildings shown on this slide were part of one original development, with an overall Oracle Road street frontage of more than 1,200 feet as indicated by the pink line. This quantity of signs shown on this slide for a property with 1,200 feet of frontage is commonly allowed. Next slide. First, let's look at the proposed new entryway signs. At the northern entrance, the applicant proposes to add 2 entryway signs identifying the development. The proposed signs are 10 feet tall with 50 square feet of text. Usually those signs are allowed to be 6 feet tall with 32 square feet of text. But this entry tends to be unnoticeable to both south and northbound traffic due to its elevation being lower than Oracle Road. And currently the entry is not seen as an entryway into all properties. Again, because the larger signs are being proposed through a master sign program, latitude, such as bigger signs, can be requested with recommendation by the commission and final decision with council, when there are unique circumstances such as the lower nondescript redwood. Next slide. Next is the existing tall multi-tenant monument sign located in the middle of the development. The applicant proposes that the sign, to keep the sign, but remodel it to bring it up to date to blend with the new redesign of the building and other new signs. This sign was originally allowed while in Pima County's jurisdiction, and the latitude requested here is to allow the sign to remain on the property, but allow it to be remodeled. The unique circumstance in this case is that without the approval to remodel the sign could remain in place as a legal non-conforming sign, but not receive any structural improvement. Next slide. Next is the proposed new monument sign located at the southern entrance across from the existing Bank of the West sign. This sign brings the total number of monument signs for the two Oracle Place developments to three. Three signs includes this sign that we see on this slide, the remodeled existing sign from the previous slide, and an existing Bank of the West sign that are all technically located on the property of two Oracle Place. The unique circumstance for this property is that originally, all of the buildings in that area that we saw on a map earlier were developed as one property. As one property, the proposed and existing signs would not be out of the ordinary, but since the division of the properties, the ownership of all signs are not under control of two Oracle Place. Three signs would technically be on the applicant's property. Again, a master sign program allows latitude for the zoning code, which includes additional signs, and considering all properties as one development. Next slide. Next, we'll look at, Next, we'll look at wall signs. In the master sign program is a proposal to increase the wall sign size allowances for tenants. The increase is from 1 square foot of sign area to 1.5 square feet of sign area. This means that if a tenant has 40 linear feet of frontage, usually they would be limited to a 40 square foot sign. But if 1.5 square feet of sign area is allowed, then the tenant could have up to a 60 square foot sign. This keeps the proposed sign size in line with existing wall sign allowances originally afforded to the development that was built in the county, and allows parity to existing adjacent developments across Oracle Road who are still located in the county road. Also, this property has a row of shop spaces that are recessed behind the bulk of a two-story building that lend toward the unique circumstances of this property. Also included on this slide is an example of the proposed colors in the master sign program, all of which are colors allowed in the zoning code. For many, many years now, we've been seeing more colors used on signs in the area, such as in the Oracle Crossing development, San Dorado, Brewing Ranch, and the Oro Valley Marketplace development. Next slide. And as always, we look to the general plans, goals, and policies when reviewing sign programs. The staff finds that the proposed master sign program meets the general plan standards by emphasizing identification for the center without intrusiveness. Next slide. And again, a master sign program is an avenue which allows latitude to existing zoning code standards. The latitude in this case is for larger signs, keeping an existing monument sign as legal non-conforming, but allow it to be remodeled, and allow an additional monument sign. Basically, the master sign program allows for parity amongst the adjacent developments that can previously allow Pima County standards and provide an avenue for updated signage on the property. The applicant has joined us tonight with their own presentation and to answer any questions that you might have. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Ms. Hayes. Mr. Spaeth, can we please load the applicant's presentation and turn the time over to them?
Yes, Chair Gamble, give me 1 second. And Ms. Carrie Sylvan is here representing the property owner. I will unmute her and turn her video on if she likes, so I'll put her presentation on the screen.
And Melissa is going to start.
Okay. Let me get her going. Okay. I believe she should be good to go.
I'm joined virtually by my partner, Rick Volk of Volk Company, our attorney, Perry Sylvan, and our sign consultant, Mike Addis of Addis Signs. First, I want to tell you how much we appreciate the town figuring out a way to hold this commission meeting virtually. Nimble is not a word I usually use to describe town government, so, but I think it's appropriate here, and we thank you.
Rick and I own Truro Place with our investment partners. We last came before all of you 4 months ago for approval on our planned redevelopment of the exterior remodel of Two Oracle Place. We received the commission and mayor and council support on that vision, and we're here again to ask for your support on the master sign program as the next component of our renovation. Next slide, please. So what exists today on our property is a multi-story building originally developed in Pima County in 1985. The property was annexed into the town in 2015. It's had no meaningful update in 35 years. In May, the property's largest tenant, Platinum Fitness, went out of business. And since then, the occupancy has hovered at or below 50%. Next slide, please. The exterior renovation and master sign program have been developed to address and improve the property's somewhat unique existing conditions. First, the renovations will take the property from feeling very office-like, which is what it feels like now, to a true kind of retail mixed-use tenancy and look. The renovated property will have restaurants, offices, service tenants, and retail tenants. Next slide. We'll achieve the update by getting rid of the faded stucco and applying a new skin of composite wood planks and metal. We'll add covered patio structures to create building depth and amenities for our future restaurants. We'll create new entrance points for different tenants to repurpose the large vacant gym portion of our building. The new contemporary look and mixed use occupancy will breathe new life into Two Oracle Place. And the master sign program is a big piece of the puzzle to unlock the property's potential, to ensure that our tenants have the signage they need to overcome the property's unique characteristics and to make sure that customers can safely find these businesses. One of the main challenges was that the property was built in Pima County and then later annexed into the town of Oro Valley. We have to compete for tenants with nearby properties like Cottonwood Plaza across the street and Casas Adobes to the south. They're in different jurisdictions. They've got different sign codes. The MSP addresses this challenge as well as other challenges with the property. Recommendation to approve here tonight is the important final step in making this property an asset instead of an eyesore for the Oro Valley community. Your staff has been awesome in helping us navigate through the design process and the sign process. And I thank you all in advance for your time and effort and consideration. I'll leave you with just one thing before I hand the presentation off to Carrie. You know, this economic crisis that we all suddenly find ourselves in caused by the coronavirus has made us do some real soul searching on this property because of the somewhat unlucky timing of when we're planning on starting the renovations. And we're poised to start construction in earnest this week, which means we are going to start investing a lot of money in improving this property and renovating it when we don't at the moment know if we can actually lease it up. We had to make a really difficult call on whether to let this property kind of sit and wait for everything to, for the market to improve, or should we forge ahead even though restaurants and salons are closed at the moment. We want to move ahead. We want to forge ahead because we believe in the property, when we believe in the location, even though the road is going to be a lot harder for us. So now more than ever, our design and our signage are really of critical importance to make sure that this project is successful. So thank you again, and I will hand it over to Carrie Sylvan. Thanks.
Okay. Did I push on the right buttons in the right order?
There you are.
Can everybody hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. Is it your volume that's on? Okay. We're going to pull the volume down so we're not echoing. Michael, you can go to the next slide. So I want to echo my, I don't want to literally echo. Are you all hearing an echo or no? Chair Gamble.
I'm hearing an echo, yes.
Okay. Give us a quick second. Yeah. Okay. I think it should be better now.
Yes.
Sorry about that.
No problem.
We're social distancing. We're 6 feet away, but we decided we should be in the same conference room in case you all ask us a question and we need to coordinate. So we are social distancing. I want to thank you all as well for making this all work during these very interesting times. I'm going to run through just a couple of context thoughts and highlight some of the signs. Staff, Patty did a fantastic job, and then really take whatever questions you may have. As Patty already indicated, this is actually originally a 7-acre coordinated development that has been broken up in ownership over the years. It was originally developed in Pima County, so it was meant to function in a lot of ways and still does as a cohesive center. We have the 3.5 acres that are in the middle, as staff noted, and then there's 1.2 acres to our north and another 2.5 to the south. So the entire center has 1,200 linear feet of frontage on Oracle Road, two entrances, only one that has a left-hand turn capability. We're all pretty familiar with Oracle Road in this area. It's a 6-lane, and actually as you go further to the south, closer to Ina, it turns into an 8 or 9 lane as those turn lanes come into existence. And Oracle Road sits higher with our site sitting anywhere from 2.5 to 5.5 feet lower. The properties on all three other corners are all in unincorporated Pima County. And particularly the Cottonwood Plaza across the street sits higher. So even their wall signs are things that you can see very easily as you're going up and down Oracle Road. That you can go to the next slide, Michael. Thank you. The actual building on our 3.5 acres is unique in the sense that it's got the two stories in the front. It's actually three stories in the back based on that grade difference. So as you go to the east side of Oracle and come across Oracle, the topography heads down. There's a single story portion of the building that's tucked. And it's tucked between our two-story portion and then the adjacent site to our south. So when we have those tenants in that single-story portion, we need to make sure that they've got signage that can be seen as well. Go ahead, Michael. We have three primary goals for this sign program as we've worked through it with staff. The very first is the safety of our customers and the citizens of the region, as well as Oro Valley, who are going to be utilizing the center. This is a very intense corner with a lot of opportunity for retail and a lot of people who are turning corners, coming up to intersections, and really need to know when they can make movements into this center. for a 7-acre center and two entrances along the Oracle Road when you're down low. What we want to do is make sure that people know the name of the center, know where to make their turns, and then can, once they're in, easily find the tenants. If they're looking for a particular tenant, be able to see as well on our tenant identification signs. The second goal is really to update the signage, and I think Melissa did a great job of talking through, and I believe most of you, if not all of you on the commission, were a part of that architectural review, so you're aware of the improvements and the updates that are going on there. And we want the signage to fit into that architecture as well. The third goal is really to attract tenants, and Melissa alluded to this, and I just mentioned the other three corners are all in unincorporated Pima County. And even prior to the COVID-19 crisis, whenever a tenant is looking for a space, their ability to be seen and to have their customers be able to easily locate is critical to their success. If any of you are in the real estate industry, you know that, you know, location, location, location is always discussed, and a lot of that has to do with visibility and signage. So part of a big reason for our request is that we want, as these tenants are looking in this area and even down to the south, we want to make sure that we are in parity on the edge of the town of Oro Valley so that we're appropriately competing. We want these tenants to come into Oro Valley and not be swayed into Pima County because they can get more signage. This should be the corner that they want to be on, not the other three corners. That's the goal. Next slide. So staff has already done a great job of going through. I just want to highlight a couple of things. This is the existing sign. It's a legal nonconforming sign in Pima County. The incentive on these signs is to keep them exactly the way they are and just change the tenant panels. That is not what Two Oracle wants to do. And so in working with staff, we talked about being able to update this sign, particularly the structure, and reclad it to match the architecture. We have some leases signed for some tenants to come in, and this sign is critically important to them. So we believe this is a better sign. We worked with staff as well to put that, what we keep calling a cap, on the top of the sign because it gives it a finished look. But really it's to keep the signage portion the same and then reclad the structure so that it matches the architecture as we refurbish the site. Go ahead. The second, this is the second monument sign, and I apologize. I think all this nervousness of doing a presentation in a new format. That should say south entrance, not north. And it's on a couple of the slides, so I apologize for that. Apparently in my preparation, I mixed up north and south. So the monument, this will go on the south entrance. And this is a monument sign that we are suggesting be 10 feet tall and otherwise fits within the Oro Valley code. Again, we have a grade differential there. Staff, I think, has already done a great job of explaining. This will go at the entrance, the one entrance that is actually on our property. So we're essentially asking for there to be two monument signs on our property, the existing one that's permitted to remain, but the ability to refurbish it. And then the second is this monument sign at our entrance. And again, in compliance with code. Go ahead. Entryway signs are also permitted in the code. So these are two of the entryway signs that we're requesting. These will go on the south entrance, north entrance. See, this is the problem. These are going on the north entrance. This is where we have the left-hand turn capability. So it'll be really important for people to know that for all three of the properties, that the full 7 acres, this is your opportunity to turn left. And so we felt that these were important at this entrance. We're not requesting them at the other entrance. The code arguably permits that. We're just asking for them at this entrance because of that left-hand turn capability. Go ahead. The next three slides are really the different wall signs. These are all wall signs that are permitted. The quantity, the type, the color, the lighting are all permitted in the code. We have not asked for anything relative to these. So these are all signs that the code would permit. What we are asking for in the master sign program is the new math, the 1.5 square feet of signage per linear foot of frontage as opposed to 1 square foot. Pima County is at 1.5. So again, the other three corners permit the 1.5. The town of Oro Valley does in your sign code permit 1.5. It's just on properties where the buildings are a little bit further away from Oracle Road. We think a combination of the parity with Pima County and the fact that we do have some visibility issues with that single story that's sort of tucked behind the two story and the grade differential and just the amount of things that are going on in this area justify that 1.5. And again, we don't want to be at a competitive disadvantage on the other three corners. Michael, you can go to the next slide. And again, these are just showing the signs that are already permitted in code. We're not asking for anything in the master sign program. Can you go one more? Same thing. One more. So to summarize, these are really four things, and they're highlighted in the staff report that the CSP is requesting be changed, which is to update the existing monument sign that's on the site. Place a new monument sign at the south entrance. That should say south, not north. The size of the entryway signs that we are placing at the north entrance, and then the wall signage calculation at 1.5. And with that, I am able to answer some questions. I think we solved the echo problem with Melissa jumping off the Zoom. So if there's something she needs to ask, I'll scoot over 6 feet away, and she can pop into my camera so that we're handling them. Thank you again for your time, and we obviously respectfully request a recommendation to approve.
All right, thank you. So I will open up questions for the commissioners. So if any commissioners have a question, raise your hand. Commissioner Hurst, can you proceed now?
Yes, I can. I have several questions, primarily for staff. I'm curious about the height of entrance signs that's typically found along Oracle Road in Oro Valley. As I drove up and down, I saw all sorts of different heights. Some I presume were 6 feet and complying with the code. Some seemed to be taller. And I'm just wondering if the staff knows what the typical sign is in terms of height for an entrance sign.
Chair Gamble, I'm going to have Patty Hayes with staff answer that question.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Spade. So Commissioner, there is a general code allowance for entryway signs to be 6 feet tall. And that 6 foot can be measured from the grade of the adjacent roadway. However, many of our larger commercial developments have gone through this same master sign program process. So folks like the San Dorado Plaza, where Mod Pizza and Chipotle is located, they have extremely large monuments or entryway signs there. You'll find the same at Oro Valley Marketplace. So there's actually a variety of sizes because of the master sign program process allowance.
Okay, that I guess what I'm alluding to then is, do we really need to have 10-foot signs, entrance signs at this location when there's already a non-conforming freestanding monument sign and then another monument sign and then signs all over the top of the building, the sides of the building and everything else? It would seem to a casual observer that there's a lot of signage, and a 6-foot entrance sign would be sufficient.
Commissioner,
that's my statement. You don't have to answer okay. that. Second one I have, though, is about the existing sign that's going to be remodeled. I'm sure there are other locations on Oracle Road in other properties in Oral Valley that have non-conforming signs of that nature. I will ask for your opinion. In your opinion, does our approval of the remodeling of a non-conforming sign imply that we're going to be approving the remodeling of all non-conforming signs along Oracle Road for whatever justification? I can't think of any justification to allow this one to be remodeled other than the staff thinks it's a good idea. But to me, it opens the door to throwing out the sign ordinance and saying we're going to overrule it in this case, in this case, in this case. And if we're going to do that, maybe we should look at the sign ordinance.
Commissioner, so the sign ordinance actually does allow this master sign program process to allow a latitude to our sign standards. So, but each one of these latitude approvals for each development is very specific to just that development. It doesn't reach out to other developments at all. Each development is looked at individually and independently for their own circumstances.
Well, I understand that. I understand the need for latitude, but I also understand when another property comes in and has their attorney saying, how come you allowed it here and you're not allowing it there? And I don't see any justification in the record for allowing it at this particular piece of property. I'm going to sue you. So, you know, I think flexibility is fine, but you have to have a much stronger justification for a 10-foot sign instead of a 6-foot for remodeling an existing non-conforming sign. I don't see the justification in the report. Okay. That's my question.
Chair Gambo, it looks like Commissioner Sturman has a question.
All right, let's unmute Commissioner Sturman.
Thank you.
And you're there.
Okay, thank you very much. I noticed because of the number of signs and also that they're lit, do we comply with the dark sky ordinance that all these are being lit, and how long do they remain lit? Are they lit all night along the Oracle area?
Chair Gamble, I'm going to defer that to the applicant. So if Ms. Okay. Sylvan is ready to answer, I'm going to unmute you.
The answer is that we will have to comply with the outdoor lighting code, and it does currently comply. Pima County has a similar, in fact, the whole region, I think, adopted the same outdoor lighting code. So as we've made a commitment, and it's actually in our master sign program that says that as we do this, we will comply with the outdoor lighting code in Oro Valley.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Did you have any other questions, Commissioner Sturman?
No, I do not.
No. All right. Any of the other commissioners have questions now?
Not that I see.
No. All right. I will then open the public hearing portion of this. So if there's anyone in the public that would like to comment, please click on the raise hand button, or if you're on a phone, press the *9. To speak, and we'll just wait a few seconds to see if anybody would like to comment. All right, I'm not seeing anybody, so we will close. close the public hearing for that. And I will open this up to discussion for the commission. Did anybody have any discussion points or comments that they would like to make? All right, let's start with Vice Chair Harrington.
Thank you, Chair. I see that the need for the signage and improvements for the new tenants that are coming in, and I understand some of the concerns that are about some of the heights of the signs. Did we do any kind, was there any kind of studies done on visibility as you're driving into the parking lot with the new, instead of 6 foot, 10 foot now, directional sign coming into the property? I didn't hear that. I was trying to wait and see, and I'm looking at some of the slides. As far as the directional signs coming into the property, I was looking through the slides and information, but I didn't see anything about, was there any directional heights or any complications or any kind of studies, anything done? I understand why they want to do it. I just didn't see if anything was done or said about it. I think that's pretty much what only concern I had, and I understand why the height and for the new tenants.
Chair Gamble, did you want the applicant to address that or?
Sure.
Okay, I'll go ahead and turn Ms. Sylvan's microphone back on.
Okay, thank you. Chair Gamble and Vice Chair Harrington, what we didn't do a study, but we do know that the grade differential along Oracle Road in that 1,200 foot stretch changes anywhere from 2.5 feet to, at some of the steepest points, 5.5 feet. So as you're, let's say you're coming down Ina heading west and you turn right, right? So you're in the very, very far right-hand lane, or the second one, if you're smart, because you think you're gonna turn left. You are very far away, and you have a grade differential in that area of probably close to the 4 feet. And so the ability to see the sign from that position, a 10 foot, and again, you're maneuvering over into the left-hand turn lane, right? Because you're trying to get over. And so as we think about it, that's the spot that we're targeting for that entryway sign. If you're heading southbound on Oracle Road, you have a little more opportunity, but again, it's still down a little bit lower, so the ability to see it is there. So we didn't do any visual studies, any of that, but just kind of looking at some of the signage and the conditions out there. There is a lot of retail concentrated in that corner, on all four of those corners. And so the ability for people to really see that, we think is important. We were trying not to, not to request obviously another 20 foot sign. But we thought that was a good, based on the grade, and it was a good compromise, with what's out there. Does that help?
Yes, that does help a little bit with some of the information. Thank you.
All right, Vice Chair Harrington, did you have any other questions?
Thank you.
All right, could we please move on to Commissioner Posey to unmute her, and then you're ready to go.
Yes, actually, Vice Chair Harrington asked the questions I had, I feel like the signs are beneficial for people driving down Oracle, especially to people that are not from here, and I just feel like it's a good thing, and the overall. The improvements of it is, I just am hopeful that the surrounding businesses will this will encourage them to upgrade into the sign sold. Thank you, Vice Chair Harrison, for going there with those questions. That's pretty much what I had. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Commissioner Posey. Can we please unmute Commissioner Bergsma now? All right, Commissioner Bergsma, you've got the floor.
Yes, this is a comment, not a question. I guess my comment is if we're starting with a blank slate here, this is a entirely new commercial development all along this corridor here, then I'd say that we could do a much better job of signage than is being proposed here and reduce the number of signs that would be provided. But this is not a blank slate. You're talking about a whole big commercial development that's been there for years and years. Most of it's outside the town limits and subject to county standards. So they've got to compete, and they've got to identify themselves relative to all the other commercial activity in that area. So I think that this is probably as good as we're going to get given this situation. I certainly want to see this development succeed, especially in these trying economic times. So I think it's appropriate to approve this.
All right. Did we have any other commissioners that had a comment?
Chair Gamble, I don't see any additional ones.
Okay, I don't. I just want to put in my two cents. I also want this commercial venture to succeed. I think it sounds like just such a wonderful asset to have in Oro Valley. And I know it's difficult when we're competing with Pima County that has standards that are a little more lax than ours are, but I see the need to stay competitive and agree with some of my other fellow commissioners that that would probably be the best call for this property for its success. So with that, if nobody else has a comment, I will ask for a motion. Commissioner Bergsma?
Yes, I move to recommend approval of the master sign program in attachment one for 2 Oracle Place based on the finding that the proposed sign program is consistent with the design principles.
All right, and can I get a second?
I second that.
Okay, thank you. Vice Chair Harrington, did you have any other questions or were you just seconding?
Just seconding.
Okay, and is that the same with Commissioner Posey?
Yes, it is. Thank you.
Okay. All right, so then the motion has been put forth and second. Ms. N. Khanna, can you please do a roll call vote?
Vice Chair Gamble?
Aye.
Oh, I'm sorry, Chair Gamble.
Okay, aye.
Vice Chair Harrington?
Aye.
Commissioner Bergsma?
Aye.
Commissioner Hurst?
No. I'd like to explain my reasoning for a no vote. I do not see any justification for the retention of the existing monument sign, nor the 10-foot height in excess of the city's sign ordinance. So I'm voting no.
Okay. Commissioner Hong?
Aye.
Commissioner Posey?
Aye.
And Commissioner Sturman?
Aye.
Motion passes 6-1.
All right, thank you. Ms. Ancona, if you could please read out agenda item number 4.
Yes. Discussion and possible action regarding proposed grazing in a portion of Stone Canyon Neighborhood 7, located north of Tortolita Mountain Circle, abutting the town's boundaries. Item A, public hearing, a text amendment to the Rancho Vistoso planned area development to add grazing as a conditional use to the low-density residential zoning district. And item B, public hearing, a conditional use permit allowing grazing in a portion of Stone Canyon Neighborhood 7, located north of Tortolina Mountain Circle, abutting the town's boundaries.
All right, thank you. I will turn the time over to Mr. Spaeth while he loads the PowerPoint and introduces the staff presentation.
Thank you, Chair Gamble. Yes, Ms. Melini Sims is going to give the staff presentation for this item, and I think I actually have it ready to go. So, Ms. Sims, I think you're good.
Thank you, and good evening. Our purpose tonight is to discuss the applicant's request to allow grazing in a portion of Stone Canyon Neighborhood 7. And then Mr. Spaeth has a chance, we'll get to the next slide. Thank you. So this request requires two separate yet related items. The first is a text amendment to the Rancho Vistoso planned area development to allow requests for conditional use permits for grazing in the low density residential zoning district. And the second is the subsequent conditional use permit to specifically allow grazing in a portion of Stone Canyon Neighborhood 7. I will explain each request further in my presentation, but both are discretionary asks. This means the applicant is asking for new property rights and the Planning and Zoning Commission is tasked with making a recommendation to town council for each. These are being presented this evening for discussion and possible action. Next slide, please. So the subject area is located in the northwest part of the Stone Canyon neighborhoods. It is outlined in yellow and located north of Tortolita Mountain Circle and abuts the town of Oro Valley's boundaries to the north and to the west. To the east is open space and to the south is large lot custom homes, as well as the Stone Canyon Golf Course and Clubhouse. The subject area is currently vacant, and per the applicant, grazing activities have occurred on the site since 1987. Next slide, please. The area is zoned low density residential and regulated by the Rancho Vistoso Planned Area Development, or PAD. This means the Rancho Vistoso PAD provides the zoning standards, such as permitted uses for the area, rather than the Oro Valley Zoning Code. Currently, the uses permitted in low-density residential are single-family homes and other uses associated with the neighborhood, such as playgrounds as well as golf-related activities. The key uses permitted are shown on the screen. Currently, grazing is not an allowed use. In addition to the subject area, there are three other areas also zoned low-density residential, which are shown in yellow on the screen. These include other Stone Canyon neighborhoods and the estates at High Mesa. It is important to mention that other than the subject area, the rest of these areas are developed. Next slide, please. To uniformly apply the code, the applicant's first request is to add grazing as a conditional use to the low density residential district. Adding grazing as a conditional use is consistent with the Oro Valley Zoning Code. The use table from the zoning code is shown on the screen. As you can see, in all residential districts regulated by the Oro Valley Zoning Code, grazing is allowed except for in one, requiring approval of a conditional use permit. Conditional use permits must go through the public review process, which includes a neighborhood meeting and consideration by the commission and town council. This means, should this item be approved, it would allow all property owners of property zoned low density residential in Rancho Vistoso to request a conditional use permit for grazing. However, to assist with compatibility, the zoning code has further provisions to dictate the amount of land needed for grazing and amount of livestock one can have. An owner must have at least 3.3 acres of contiguous land and no more than one head of livestock per 30,000 square feet of land. The code also prohibits pigs. These provisions are included in the text amendment as well. Therefore, any request for a conditional use permit for grazing must comply with them as well. And as stated previously, the subject area is the only low-density residential zone property that's completely undeveloped and has enough acreage for grazing. To summarize, the first request is to apply the zoning code standards and process for grazing to the low-density residential zone in Rancho Vistoso. Next slide, please. The second request is for the subsequent conditional use permit to allow grazing specifically to the subject area in Stone Canyon Neighborhood 7, where the first request lays the groundwork for this second request, and therefore it must be approved for this one to be considered. Conditional use permits are evaluated to a criteria established in the zoning code. The criteria is shown on the screen and focuses on compatibility to the surrounding area. With regard to the proposed use, creating damage or being a nuisance, per the applicant, the area has been actively grazed again since 1987. As such, an existing fence and natural barriers exist to keep the cattle on the subject property. However, staff has included additional mitigation measures in attachment 4 of your packet to further protect surrounding residents. I will go through these in a minute. However, the proposed use is not applicable nor will affect the other criteria shown on the screen. Next slide, please. A one neighborhood meeting was held for the applicant's request. During the meeting, concerns and questions regarding the proximity of the cows to surrounding homes and the amount of cows allowed were discussed. The applicant's request includes the following mitigation measures as conditions of approval. The images on the screen show the existing fence line and natural barriers located around the subject property. The types of fence on site include two types of barbed wire fencing. There's also rock outcrops and steep slopes also providing a barrier. With regard to keeping the cattle on the subject property, should complaints arise of cattle getting out of the subject area, the applicant must provide timely and substantive remedies, or the CUP will be reconsidered by the commission and council. Secondly, a condition is included to limit the amount of cows to 50. This number was originally proposed by the applicant, but as of yesterday, the applicant would like to reduce this amount to 3 cows. The applicant is joining us this evening to discuss this matter further. Lastly, once building permits are required to develop this area, the conditional use permit will expire and grazing activities must stop. Again, these measures are included in attachment 4 as conditions of approval for item B. Next slide, please. Both requests were reviewed for conformance to the general plan. Although the proposed use is not directly related to several of the goals and policies, it does fit within the definition for low density land use, which are areas that are rural and open in character. It also maintains an effective transition between the proposed use and large lot homes to the south. Next slide, please. In summary, the applicant's first request is again a text amendment to apply the zoning code standards and process for grazing to the low density residential zoning district in Rancho Vistoso. It would allow all property owners of low density residential land that meet the grazing requirements to request a conditional use permit for grazing. The second request is the subsequent conditional use permit to specifically allow grazing in a portion of Stone Canyon Neighborhood 7. Again, per the applicant, grazing activities have occurred on the site since 1987, and this request does include mitigation measures intended to address residents' concerns and protect surrounding neighbors. Both requests were found to be in conformance with the general plan and zoning code, and therefore staff recommends approval of item A and conditional of approval of item B, subject to the mitigation measures in attachment 4. Again, item A lays the groundwork for item B. Should the commission recommend approval of item B, item A must also be recommended for approval. This concludes my presentation, but again, the applicant is here available online to present and answer questions as well. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Ms. Sims. Mr. Spaeth, could you please load the applicant's presentation and turn the time over to them?
Yes, Chair Gamble, Mr. Paul Owen, representing the applicant, is here, and I believe he is ready to go. Let me pull up his presentation.
All right, thank you.
And just a sec. All right.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Owen, are you there?
I am here. Can you hear me?
Okay. floor is yours.
Yes. All right, thank you, sir. My name is Paul Oland. I'm with Paradigm Land Design. I'm representing the property owner here. And this is, of course, as usual, did a great job of covering all of the points that I really needed to make. So I won't take up more time than we need. But I would like to highlight a couple of key issues just so that we can make sure we're on the same page.
Chair Gamble? Sorry, if you don't mind if I jump. Mr. Oland, would you mind speaking a little bit louder, please?
How's that?
Better. Thank you.
All right. So I'll just take a couple of minutes here, run through some of the high points. As Ms. Sims mentioned, this property has been grazed since 1987. Of course, historically, grazing has been active in this area for decades before that. It's actually part of a larger land holding. This slide here shows the Martin Ranch grazing area, which is about a little over 25,000 acres. They've been actively grazing since 1985, so 35 years, if my math is correct, and all of that with little or no issue to any surrounding property owners. As you can see, this grazing area here, if you look at the map, the sort of the bottom four bars of sections there, those are Pima County, and then the bottom three, and then the top four bars are where it says Martin grazing leases and 1985 to 2000. That and above is all Pinal County. So it crosses the county line. It's a huge ranch, and it operates in conformance with the Arizona State Department of Agriculture's grazing rules, which have a low density. They have a density of eight cows per section, which maths out to 80 acres per cow in terms of the overall grazing area allotment. So one other thing I wanted to point out on this slide is that you'll notice down at the southeast portion of this grazing area of the overall 25,000 acre grazing area, you'll notice that what that does is it actually abuts Sun City, which is obviously much, much denser than Stone Canyon. And they've been grazing this for years and years and years and have not had any issues. Of course, the grazing lease was in place right around the time Vistosa started. Would you go to the next slide, please, Mike? Thanks. So the subject property is about 209 acres there in the north end of Stone Canyon. And the funny thing about this whole request is that most residents in Stone Canyon likely aren't aware that grazing has occurred and still does occur in Stone Canyon. Basically, the way it has worked since Stone Canyon started, it was originally almost all grazed. And then as the different phases of Stone Canyon have come online, the grazing boundary has been pulled back successively in response to those developments. There have been no formal complaints because ranchers are very responsive to concerns. Every once in a while, a cow does get out and the ranchers are always there very quickly to collect it. But those are few and far between. And again, no formal complaints. The subject property was platted in 2006 by a previous owner who had no intention of developing it at the time. He was trying to increase the value on paper of the property. Current owner is not a developer. They received this property through foreclosure. And as I mentioned before, this section of Stone Canyon, Phase 7, as well as portions of Phase 8, which are a little further to the east, are just simply not ready for development yet. There's still an ample supply of lots in earlier phases that are yet to be bought and developed. So we're simply seeking to continue the historic grazing activity that's been going on for more than 30 years. If we look at the conditional use permit criteria there, and Ms. Sims already went through them, but again, no damage or nuisance from these activities. In fact, at the neighborhood meeting, we had one of the neighbors who lives right next door, one of our adjacent neighbors. He attested to the fact that he's lived there and he enjoys it and he's never had a single problem with the grazing. And more recently, the owners have actually pulled all of the fencing back 30 feet from the property lines, just to further reduce the potential of there being any sort of issue. So the CCNRs, the Stone Canyon CCNRs, allow grazing. The Stone Canyon HOA has approved this use. They're aware of it and they've approved it. And this request is really consistent with the rest of Oro Valley's code, as Ms. Sims pointed out. So again, our request is really just to continue to be allowed to conduct the same low impact grazing that has occurred here for decades. And I'd be happy to answer any other questions.
Okay, thank you. I will open this up for discussion or for questions from the commission only at this time. And it looks like Commissioner Sturman has the first question.
I'm a little confused because if I recall, the first documents that we're reading is that it was for 50 head of cattle for that are no more than 50 head. But now is there a change of only 3 head of cattle for the whole 208 acres? And that's for Mr. Olin.
Yeah, Chair Gamble, sorry, I was muted. I'll let Mr. Olin answer that.
Thank you, Mr. Spade. Correct. Yeah, you know, when we first started this application, we had requested 3 because that is what the allotment is per the Department of Agriculture. Yeah. And as we went through it and some discussions with staff, we thought maybe some additional flexibility was there just because basically the town's density on grazing would allow a whole lot more. I think it's 1.25 cows per acre, if memory serves. But at the end of the day, what we really want is just the ability to continue utilizing the state ag department's allotment of 3 cows, contributing to the overall grazing density for the 25,000 acre ranch. So the number should be 3 on the conditions of approval. That would be our preference.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, if we can unmute Commissioner Bergsma.
Yes, I have a question relating to the text amendment. The question I have is that the change shown in attachment 2 to the staff report, and I believe this is consistent with Ms. Sims' presentation as well, would allow for farms and ranches subject to the provisions of the code and town council approval. So this is not just to allow for grazing. This would allow for other kinds of farming and ranching activities in terms of the text amendment. Is that correct?
Chair Gamble, Ms. Sims.
Chair Gamble, Commissioner Bergsma, that is correct. So grazing is allowed under farms and ranches, which does allow one head of livestock, which could be other animals, as well as small animals, such as, I believe, rabbits and pets of that manner.
So
they would all require a conditional use permit.
Right,
so
right.
Anything as permitted under farms and ranches.
Conceivably, somebody could come in and ask for horses, sheep, llamas, anything that would be considered to be livestock.
Chair Gamble, Mr. Olin would like to provide an answer as well.
Okay.
Thank you. So this is growing a little bit of hair on it that there really doesn't need to be. All we're asking for is the ability to graze three cows. I'd be totally happy with a condition limiting it to nothing else. No rabbits or llamas or anything else. That would be totally acceptable because all we're trying to do is continue what has been happening there for a long time.
Right, and I understand what you're asking for under the conditional use permit, and that's what you would be limited to, just the 3 cattle. But I'm talking about the text amendment, which would allow for assuming somebody else wanted to do something other than what you're requesting, they could do a request under a conditional use permit application.
Yeah, and Chair Gamble, Member Burisma, what I might also add too is keep in mind that there are property size requirements as well. And so within the Rancho Vistoso PAD, as Ms. Sims pointed out in her presentation, outside of this area, all of the other low density residential areas are already developed to the point that they don't meet those area requirements, right? And so effectively, there isn't the possibility or probability of any of those requests down the road happening as the PAD currently sits in its current configuration. Does that help?
Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm.
All right. Did you have any more questions, Commissioner Burisma?
No, that covers it.
All right. Thank you. If we could unmute Commissioner or Vice Chair Harrington.
Chair Gamble, I have a question for Paul and about the three cattle. I was also concerned about the number reduced from 50 to three. Is it going to be continuous three cows, or is it going to be rotating the cows out, or one of these cows expire, you're going to bring in another cow? I'm just trying to get more information. I'm kind of concerned on the number change from 50 to three and where we're going with the heads of cattle or livestock that's going to be on the premises. It just, the number change caught my attention, and I'm not sure that I got my answer clarified, or the answer was not spoken. So I'd like to see if Paul will clarify that information a little bit more clearly.
Great, Mr. Allen.
Thank you. Yes, so basically the way the ranching laws work is that you take the acreage of all of the contributing properties within an overall lease area, and they total your maximum herd size within the overall ranch. And the cows, that number of cows cannot be exceeded within the overall ranch, and they can wander wherever they want to. So there are cows that do wander down into this area. This, at the southern end of the ranching area, is among the tougher to traverse. There is plenty of forage, but there's also lots of rock outcrops and things like that. So it's not a heavily used portion of the ranch, but there's no, there's no guard at the gates that says you can only have three people in here, like there is at Costco now. There just isn't a way to really regulate how many cows are on any one portion of the ranch. But again, because of the terrain and everything down here, it really doesn't get used heavily by the cattle. So the three number is really the number of cows that this acreage contributes to the maximum number of cows allowed on the overall ranch. Does that answer the question, or just confuse it more?
I think what it is I'm looking at a 209 acre parcel of a larger piece of a property, and what you're basically asking or we're telling us is that you may have migration from another part of the ranch to this piece of acreage. Is that what we're hearing?
Correct. So within that overall 25,000 acre ranch, the cows that are on there can move around. There's probably a large herd that is up north that never gets this far. The ones that do come down this far just sort of wander in. They're not numerous. I've talked to a number of residents and the former owners, and they will all attest, and actually the rancher, they will all attest to the fact that there's only a few cows who ever wander down into this portion of the ranch, but they do migrate around, correct? So I guess my guess would be most of the time there are fewer than three on the property, but three is the number that it contributes to the overall allotment.
I have a follow-up question or explanation. So the number three could be more than that. So we're putting the number three on there really doesn't really factor in what's on the text, because it could be It could be 3, it could be 300. I'm just putting that number out there. It could change. It's a possibility is what I'm saying.
Sure, and that's just the way ranching works in Arizona. But I will tell you that the cows, of course, go where it's easiest to walk and where they can find the most food that's easiest to eat, and that's not on this property.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Vice Chair Harrington. Can we please move on to Commissioner Posey's question?
Yes, thank you. Chair Gamble. First of all, I guess this is not really about ranching. It's about the bottom line being you get a property tax break. And that's just what I'm getting. It'll sound like a ranching thing. But anyway, let's say there's three cows. Cows tend to gather together, in one spot. So let's say they're at a fence line. What my question is, and I guess Ms. Sims can answer this probably, but what is the code that says how far a fence line there can be from an inhabited dwelling? Do you know that, Ms. Sims, or somebody? You know what I'm saying? Where somebody is living in, okay.
Commissioner Gamble, Chair Gamble, Commissioner Posey. So fences, as long as they're 6 feet or in height or less, they could be on the property line. And even for a fence line for the proposed use, there isn't in the code any language for a distance requirement. So as Mr. Olin had stated before, the fence line was on their property line, but they have moved it back 30 feet to provide a buffer, if you will.
I said that wrong. I think actually I was saying for the adjacent property, like adjacent from the property line, an inhabited dwelling. Let's say there was a house on another piece of property. Do you know if there is anything that indicates how far that house would have to be from that fence line? Because you know cows can tend to have to smell sometimes. You know, so.
Sure.
Is that, am I explaining it wrong or something? Probably, no?
Chair Gamble, Commissioner Posey. No, great question. I think I understand this time, but please let me know if I don't. So for the house, with regard to the proximity to where the proposed use will happen, they would just have to follow their setbacks within their own property. Again, there's not language that says a house has to be set back from a fence line or so many feet from where the cattle will graze, but they, within their own lot, would have to meet their setback requirements.
Okay. Thank you. You answered my question. I appreciate that.
Great.
And I'm not against anybody getting a tax break. I think that's wonderful. The county assessor's office might not like it too good, but I think it's great. Thank you, Ms. Sims. You're so knowledgeable. I appreciate you.
All right, Mr. Olin, did you have a response to that as well?
Yes.
Sorry, I noticed you raised your hand.
I did. I raised. I wanted to clarify something about the total number of cows. As far as the fence line question goes, in Arizona, it's open range laws, which means that it's actually the responsibility of the adjacent owners to fence. It's not the responsibility of the rancher, but in this case, the rancher has provided the fence. So, and that fence, as I mentioned, is getting pulled back 30 feet from those property lines, which should help if there is the potential for an issue. Cows usually just forage on the native vegetation, but I also wanted to clarify on Vice Chair Harrington's question about the herd. And the rancher, what they do is they don't want to overgraze any portion of their overall ranch holdings. And so what they do is they actively move the cows around within that ranch. So there would never be a lot of cows on this property because it doesn't offer an abundance of grazing material. What they do is they monitor where the cows go within the ranch. And if they see that too many are heading down into some portion of the ranch that isn't going to provide good food or a ton of food, then they will coax them in another direction. So this property would never have a lot of cows on it.
And Chair Gamble, can I just add from the town's perspective also, whatever number, whether it's three or another number that happens to be made a condition of this conditional use permit, if the town ever gets a complaint from a neighbor that, hey, there seems to be more than three or five or whatever the number is on the property, and we have the ability, of course, to go out and verify that there's a violation and then enforce that conditional use permit, as Ms. Sims indicated, which typically involves working with the property owner to get it back down to the number that was the condition. But it can, if it goes unchecked long enough, result in that conditional use permit being brought back before commission and council. So to Vice Chair Harrington's question about cows roam where they roam, there is a check, so to speak, on the town side to make sure that happens. But, okay. Yeah.
All right, Malini, did you have something to add to that? Your hand is raised.
Thank you, Chair Gamble. I was actually just going to say what Mr. Spates said for your awareness, but also, thank you. I also want to clarify that the condition is still currently written as 50, so whatever number the commission does decide on, and if you are recommending approval, you will need to revise that condition as part of your motion. So, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Sims. All right, Commissioner Posey, did we answer all of your questions?
Yes, you did. Thank you so much, Chair Gamble.
All right, thank you. All right, could we please unmute Commissioner Hong?
I just have a personal question. It may not be related to what is being proposed to be considered. I'm just wondering, so this property was the transfer of the ownership, it occurred due to a foreclosure from what I understand. And it has been used as a ranch. That's been what it was. And it will be used as such, correct? Okay, so if we, or if the township allows this proposed amendment and conditional use permit to be approved, when the current owner decides to sell the property in the future, it will remain as such. The land use will be remaining as such.
Ms. Sims, would you mind answering that?
Sure. Chair or Gamble, Commissioner Hong, that is correct. The conditional use permit does stay with the property unless there is a need to reconsider it, which Mr. Spates discussed earlier.
So I'm just trying to understand from my, I don't know, personal curiosity or whatever, but so would it make it more easier or is it more profitable? I don't know. Would it make it easier for the current owner to transfer the property as a ranch versus, what it is, without, having this proposal being approved.
Chair Gamble, this is Attorney Andrews. I think we're kind of jumping over into the sale of property versus dealing with the zoning and this.
Correct, I know.
To take care of. It's not on tonight's agenda.
Okay, thank you. Did you want to ask your question in a different way, Ellen?
The reason why I'm bringing it up is because there was an email or, communication from the public, and I just read it, and it has to do with the property tax, and it's all good that, current owner is trying to minimize, because of the use, it's all, proportioned to you know, what the land is being used for currently. So that's all good, but I just want to try to understand where that concern comes from. I think that's what I try to understand. You know, is this something that should be also, that should also be, you know, considered? I mean, here we're talking about number of cows allowed and, you know, with its effect on the, you know, current neighbors and so forth, but and also another fleeting concern also is listening to, you know, discussion is, you know, if there's any damage done to the surrounding property owners because of all these cows roaming, is the current owner properly insured? And is this something that, you know, the HOA and, you know, everybody else, you know, are they understanding all the ramifications? That's it.
Mr. Owen, did you want to answer that?
Sure. Thank you. So I heard several questions there. One of them has to do with potential damage to surrounding neighbors. As I mentioned before, there have been no formal complaints. I'm sure that the rancher has, you know, typical insurance as most businesses do, but that hasn't been an issue because there has not been a problem to rectify. In terms of the open space question and the note from that particular neighbor who's actually not that close to the property. So when Stone Canyon 7 was designed and platted back in 2006, we worked with town staff intensively to identify which portions of the property ought to be preserved. And a large chunk of the overall property, which goes beyond this area, was dedicated as open space by that plat. And that area is excluded from what we're asking to continue to graze on. So I guess what I'm saying is the analysis of which areas are sensitive has already been done, and those areas have been set aside. And the areas that we're proposing to continue grading in are the areas that have already been approved for construction of homes and roads and utilities and things like that. That's all part of the approved plat. This is really just a mechanism for holding the property until it's ready for actual construction and development. And I guess that, I think that answers the questions I heard, unless I missed one. Please correct me if I did.
Ellen, did you have any other questions? Or Commissioner Hong?
Perhaps it will come up, you know, when the discussion opens up to the public. So I'll just rest. Thank you.
Right. Thank you. All right. I've got another question from Vice Chair Harrington, or a question from him. Could you please unmute his speaker?
Sure. Thank you, Chair Gamble. I have an additional question. Looking at the note and text and information, I just want to clarify, this is just natural grazing of the current existing land part of the permit. It doesn't specify if there's going to be any ag done on the property to do it unnaturally.
Mr. Oland, can we unmute you for that answer?
Thank you. That's correct. Vice Chair Harrington, it's just natural. There's no grading, clearing, anything like that. There's nothing planted or anything that's you might think of as agricultural. It's just the cows wandering.
All right. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you, Chair Gamble.
All right. You are welcome. Can we unmute Commissioner Posey?
Yes, thank you, Chair Gamble. Commissioner Hahn, just when she was talking about liability, she just made me think of something I had a question about. I'm not real familiar with Arizona. It's Arizona open range laws. But if, like you said before, that it's a possibility that a cow gets out, it could happen. I mean, it's maybe, but still, if it does, is that the liability of the rancher, say to automobile or whatever, or is it a liability to the person that runs into the cow?
Mr. Oland?
Sure. So the responsibility, the owner of this property, the Hanson Trust, they have insurance and they would be responsible for that if it were to happen.
I see. Okay. And one more question. This is, I feel like this may be just temporary. I don't know. And I don't know if you know or not, but it will be probably temporary until maybe you start bringing in some, you know, some construction or whatever to build homes or whatever. Is that correct? Do you see in the future stop grazing and to build homes or businesses or something in there?
So absolutely, this is temporary. As Stone Canyon has developed, as I think I mentioned, it used to all be grazed.
And yes, sir.
It's phase 1, 2, 3 progresses. We're up to 10 phases. This is phase 7, mm-hmm. and the grazing limits have gradually been pulled back over the years as those earlier phases have come online for development. So this is absolutely a temporary thing, as it was for those earlier phases. Given the market, I would expect that given the market and given the number of available home sites elsewhere in Stone Canyon in those earlier phases, I wouldn't be surprised if this was grazed for another 10 years or so. That would just be my crystal ball guess.
All right. Commissioner Hong has another question. Can you please unmute her?
Yeah, actually, this was actually my first question, which I forgot to ask. And this is for the township. Once this request for the amendment and conditional use permit is granted, is the applicant committed or are they allowed to maybe switch back or would the future sale of the property to another individual or corporations, annul the approval? Like, would it go back to what it was before the amendment and permit?
Sure, Ms. Gamble, Ms. Timms.
And how often can they apply for, going back and forth?
Chair Gamble, Commissioner Hong. So the use permit, if it is approved, it would transfer it with the sale of property to the new property owner. But with that, the conditions that are in your attachment 4 and whatever other ones you recommend in the council, if they should approve, would also transfer. So the limiting of cows would transfer as well. And then also there is a condition that once a building permit is pulled for any of those lots, the grazing activity must stop. So that would also hold true no matter who the property owner is. The applicant, current or a future property owner, can definitely ask to amend those conditions or change them. However, that request would come back to the commission and council. And again, if any violation is made, so if they want to have more cows or more cows are found on property, if the cows are getting out and the applicant is not, the property owner, who, current or future, is not remedying any solution in an effective manner and timely manner, that would require reconsideration. So all those conditions transfer over as well. Does that clarify?
I mean, that does make sense that the conditions would transfer over, but I guess the reason why I'm asking that question is because I want to understand how often can these permits be applied for, or, you know, be asked to be revoked and, you know, retroactively go back to however it was before. Because there was a discussion or presentation, part of the presentation by the applicant stating that the previous owner wanted to up the value of the property. And, you know, despite the land actually being used as a ranch, it was sort of kind of misclassified. And therefore, the current owner is trying to go back to what it was, you know, which is the ranch use. So in the future, if the current owner do decide to sell this property in the future, say next 6 months or 3 months even, and then, you know, decide to sell the property, can they come back to the township and ask for revocation of the permit or, you know, the change of, you know, the use? And, you know, in that, and if that's the case, you know, should the commissioners meet again, and, you know, should we reconsider, and, you know, how often can they do this, you know, to us? I don't know.
Commissioner Hogg, so I think within the first part of your question, what Mr. Olin was referring to was the grazing activities that are occurring on our site are currently legal non-conforming. So if they're happening, it's because they happened before when with, you know, with code changes, et cetera, and the use is currently legal non-conforming. And what he is requesting is that the use now be legal per the zoning code through the conditional use permit process. With regard to your second question, a private property owner can make a request for uses that are permitted, can, well, utilize any use that's permitted within the property, but any conditional uses, they can request approval of those through the commission, and it is at their timeline of when they want to. And with regard to kind of revoking this conditional use permit, having the conditional use permit for grazing does not deter them from doing the uses that are already permitted on the site. And it will, again, automatically be expire once a building permits occur on site or are pulled for the site. Still, I'm not sure if I'm
so I
getting all your
I'm
answers.
Yeah, what I'm understanding is that it's just a permit, which is a temporary thing. The basic use of the land right now is actually allowed for building.
Correct.
I see. Okay. So, yeah. Okay, gotcha.
Right. The use currently is single family homes.
Right. So the township can revoke it, revoke the permit, but the use of it is for single family property. Okay, gotcha.
All right. I think that's everyone's questions. Does anybody from the commission have more questions? I'm not seeing any hands. I had a question for the town on this. What does enforcement look like? So if, or is that like a condition we can possibly add where if we get, you know, X many of complaints, then, everything gets revoked, or is there a plan in place for that?
Yeah, Ms. Sims.
Yeah, Chair Gamble. So for the amount of cows, it would be complaint driven. And then if the complaints are reoccurring, it definitely would lend itself to be failure to maintain a condition, which per code requires reconsideration of the conditional use permit by commission and council.
All right, because I know that we received, I think it was three separate emails of from concerned neighbors who weren't thrilled with this plan. And I was just kind of wondering, you know, what, maybe getting a little bit of clarification for them, like, and a little bit just more definition, how many complaints do they need to be before enforcement happens or before?
Yeah, this is Joe Andrews, and I'm kind of the end game on this if this goes sideways. What ends up generally happening is we have a process. We give them a chance to come into compliance. They don't come into compliance. It gets escalated to me, and I put it in court. and then they can go through a violation process there. At that same time, subsequent to that, the town can decide, hey, you know, this permit process is bad. Let's go back and put this in front of the mayor and council and commission, and let's revoke this permit. Let's not go there right now, because that's way down the road and something has to really go sideways. But okay. I don't want us to adopt conditions on enforcement when we have an enforcement process in place that we can actually use to actually keep this in play, and it should be all right. I wanted to make one more clarification. The reason they're coming through with this amendment is because due to all the platting and planning, their legal non-conforming use just became a non-conforming use, and that's why we're going through this. If it were a legal non-conforming use, none of this would be necessary.
Right. Okay, thank you, Joe. All right, so I didn't have any other questions, so I'm actually going to open up the public hearing portion for this agenda item. So if there's anybody from the public that would like to speak, please use the raise hand button, or if you're on a phone, dial *9. And I see three hands so far. Mr. Spaeth, can we unmute Michael Stab? Stab.
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 Stab. Yeah. My name is Michael Staub. I own a house at 1361 West Tortolita Mountain Circle that I bought about a year ago. I actually had sent a letter to the commissioners because I had tried to do it in January, but unfortunately I sent the wrong email address. And I think that I certainly understand the reason why the Hansen family wants to have the conditional use permit, but a couple of things that kind of I think are a little disconcerting. One is that, you know, Joe or Paul said that there was no intention to develop the property because they're not a developer. I mean, I think that quite frankly, that land is not going to get developed for a long, long, long time, much longer than 10 years because of it. And I think that the concern I have is when I think generally just from talking with people in my neighborhood in Stone Canyon, I didn't have a problem with the status quo, which I think everybody has kind of thought it was three cows. When I started bringing up to neighbors about 50 cows on the 200 acres, which is this phase 7, that's a lot of cows. And that's a lot of concern in terms of the ambience of the area, you know what could happen. I quite frankly, in February, I had a situation where I encountered a big black bull on my property as I was pulling out of the driveway that apparently got out because somebody had cut the fence. So, and I grew up on a farm in Kansas and we had cattle, and I can tell you the cattle do get out. If there's a way for them to get out, they will find a way. But I understand what the Hansons want to do. I don't have a problem with the three because that's the status quo. And I think that has been, you know, what has typically occurred. I think that's why people have said, oh, well, they didn't even know cows were grazing in the area because, and Paul is probably right, it's not an area where you're going to have that many cattle. But I think that, you know, keeping the status quo of the three is also in keeping with the Department of Agricultural land requirements, too, for that space of 209 acres. So that was a reason I addressed the letter and why I wanted to address the commission tonight is at least amending the second request for the conditional use permit to limiting it to no more than three cattle on that particular area.
All right, thank you. And just thank you for everyone for calling in and participating. I know this is a lot different than an in-person meeting. So I appreciate you guys taking the time and figuring out Zoom to do this. So we'll move on to the next person, Timothy Bowen. Mr. Spaeth, will you please unmute him?
Thank you, Timothy Bowen, and I am an Oral Valley resident. And this application involves a new land entitlement. And this is a land entitlement that appears to me, at least, that's been needed for well over 30 years. Now, the reason we find ourselves here tonight, in my opinion, is because we have a cultural issue here. And that is we have a very lax enforcement of the Rancho Vistoso PAD. I think there were three opportunities to catch this issue long ago. First off, WLB could have corrected the PAD any time in the last 30 years. We've heard discussion tonight where Paul Oland has said there were up to 10 different parcels of land developed in Stone Canyon in which grazing was done at one time. As these parcels came online, no one thought to update the PAD. That's very interesting to me. Secondly, we have an owner, the Hanson Trust, that took possession of land that wasn't properly entitled for its current use. Why didn't the Hanson Trust ask to have this resolved when they took ownership of the land? Third, this land's been in our town for over 30 years, and it's been in a non-conforming use, yet no one from the town, no one from enforcement has mentioned this. And I list these three reasons because it indicates a culture to me, a culture of lax enforcement of the Rancho Vistoso PAD, which is a very important legal document for our town. That Rancho Vistoso PAD governs an enormous number of entitlements in Rancho Vistoso. And I have complained and I've blogged about this. The document hasn't been properly updated, in my view, since 2008. And I would ask the commission to take a look at this document yourselves and verify when you see the last changes to this PAD document, and you will see that we are running dangerously with respect to this document. And this document should be completely reviewed and updated to reflect where we are in 2020. And the benefit of doing this type of thing would be we wouldn't find ourselves in the type of situation that we find ourselves in tonight. My hat's off to the commissioners. I would be very confused because this is a very confusing issue, and I thank you for your questions. That's the end of my statement.
All right, thank you. We'll move on to Mark Henning. Mr. Spaeth, will you please unmute him?
Good evening. Can you hear me?
Yes.
My name is Mark Henning, H-E-N-N-I-N-G. I have been a second homeowner in Oro Valley for 13 years. More to the point, in mid-March, I bought lot 472 in Stone Canyon number 7, which abuts the subject property. Before I say anything else, in my hometown of suburban Illinois, I served on the Plan Commission for over 6 years. I know that it is often very difficult work. It is mostly thankless work, and I appreciate everything you're doing. We were supposed to close in early March, but discovered that there was a fence running through the middle of the lot. And in as much as I wanted to see the entire lot before we closed, there was a delay while the barbed wire fence was moved to the north. The representatives of the Hanson family were very cooperative. They took care of it very expeditiously. I wish they would have moved the fence a little bit further north than they did, but it is beyond my property line. I had a question about the number of additional cattle. You've answered that satisfactorily. We generally have no objection to the proposal. And we think that the neighbors will be good neighbors. So on balance, we have no objection to what's going on. I really appreciate all of the analysis that's gone into this. The questions that have been asked are excellent. And we look forward to being good neighbors as well in Stone Canyon number 7.
All right, thank you. If anybody else would like to make a comment, please raise your hand now. And I don't see anybody, so I am now going to close the public hearing and ask the commissioners for some discussion. So if any of the commissioners have comments, concerns that have they've been thinking of, please raise your hands now.
And Chair Gamble, before we do that, can I ask Ms. Sims, I know she has something to add regarding the conditional use permit also. Would you mind if she adds that bit right now? Because I think it could help inform your discussion.
Okay, great. Thank you. Ms. Sims?
Thank you, Chair Gamble and Mr. Spaeth. I just want to make sure that's very clear about the number of cattle, that the commission is clear within your motion and your discussion that you are referring to the max amount of cattle allowed on the land at any given time. So the condition number 4, which is written currently, limits, of course, to the 50 that was previously mentioned, and it was written as the amount of cattle that shall roam the property at any given time. So I just want to make sure we're very clear of how the motion is proposed, should you go that way, and it's very clear of what the restriction is.
All right, thank you. If we've
got the attorney's poking his nose in again, I think Mr. Spaeth needs to mute the public. We have some people that might chime in at an inopportune time if we don't get them muted.
Thank you, Mr. Andrews.
All right, thank you. All right, Commissioner Bergsma.
So following up on what Ms. Sims was just saying, recommended condition of approval number 4 now says 50 head of cattle, and then the applicant is suggesting just staying at 3, which is consistent with the State Department of Agriculture standard. But I guess the question for Ms. Sims is, how did we end up with 50 as the maximum as opposed to some other number?
All right, Ms. Sims?
Sure. Chair Gamble, Commissioner Bergsma. So that was a conversation we had with the applicant earlier on in this process. 50 was seen as a reasonable and realistic number with regard to the larger ranch establishment, if you will. So that was heavily driven by the applicant. I would like to defer to him to maybe provide some more background on that 50 number versus the 3.
All right, Mr. Oland.
Thank you. So I want to clarify here. Originally, we asked for 3. And then in discussing with staff, if memory serves, it was basically that it was hard to align the way Oro Valley counts cows with the way the State Department of Agriculture counts cows within a larger grazing area. And so it was decided that having a condition that limited the maximum number of cows on the land would be easier to enforce, but that number necessarily needed to be more than 3, because there may be a few more that wander onto the property or that the rancher allows onto the property. I think that it feels like we're getting a little bit off on a rabbit trail, and what seems to me like a simple solution would be to say, for condition number 4, no more than 3 head of cattle shall be contributed by this property to the overall ranching operation, or something like that, because that aligns with the state rules, and what that would do would be to say that the status quo is being maintained, because it's impossible to enforce how many cows are actually on the land.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. I guess the concern is that we don't want to have a whole large number of cattle on that one relatively small area. So I can see that 3, just saying no more than 3 at any time is really not workable.
And Chair Gamble, if I can add, I mean, from the town's perspective, for this to be effective and workable in a sense, we have to have a number, right? And so that number is what we get a call on from a neighbor saying, hey, I think there's more than 3, or I think there's more than 5, or whatever that number happens to be. We at the town, we need to have a number, and I might recommend, you know, not using the language of that this property contributes to the larger ranch, because that to me kind of muddies it up a little bit. I think we need to find, or have the commission recommend, if you want to go this direction, a number that can be on this property. And yes, I understand that there's some ambiguity and some gray area in terms of how to track that and manage that, but we as the town need to have some shape to this to have it be workable.
You can go, Ms. Sims.
I was just going to say, Chair Gamble, will you please let Mr. Olin know he needs to click on the raise hand button, not raise his hand towards the screen, because we will miss him. Or two hands. Click the button, please.
Mr. Olin would like to make a comment.
Well, this is our... We're supposed to be discussing this as a commission, so I want to hear from any other commission members at this time. I think we've heard a lot from the applicants, so if there's other commission members that have questions, we'll take I'll take those. And it looks like Commissioner Sturman has one. Can you please unmute him?
Thank you, Chairman Bellman. I think Michael Spaeth is making a very good point. Let's go back with the State Department of Agriculture and say three, because that was one of my major concerns when you start talking 50 head of cattle on that type of land, which is going to be overgrazing. So let's go back to the state standard of three. Yes, it's probably going to flow back and forth, but there's eyes and ears out there that will probably report any type of excess. But the rancher has been a good neighbor, and he'll promptly get out there and push it back to three all the time. So let's don't talk about ifs or what can or what so. Let's use the standard Department of Agriculture. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner Sturman. Commissioner Hurst, could you please unmute him?
Chair Gamble, thank you very much. I was at the public hearing, as I think a lot of the commissioners were, and I clearly heard three head of cattle. The people at the public at the public hearing heard three head of cattle. And when 50 came out, I couldn't imagine what happened to get it from three to 50. I think when you tell the public it's going to be three, it's going to be three, and we need to stick with that. That's my comment.
All right, thank you. Do we have any other comments or discussion points from commissioners? No, all right. So at this time, I would ask for a motion, and I just wanted to remind everybody we'll have two separate motions, one for item A and one for item B. And if you are wanting to approve item B, we also need to approve item A. So it looks like Commissioner Hong has her hand raised. Can you please unmute her?
I am sorry. I could not find my mouse, so I couldn't timely raise my hand. I am just wondering, okay, 3 or 50, maybe I'm not really following, but the question is, does the township have the ability to enforce, whether it be 3 or 5? Can every time there's a call from some neighbor saying, I see more than 3 or I see more than 50 roaming, I mean, you know, who's going to do it? Do we have the resources and the capability? Is this realistic? I mean, is this enforceable? I think that's what I'm asking. And that affects to the township.
Mr.
Spaeth? Yeah. So, yes, we do. Obviously, some requirements are of Chair Gamble, excuse me, Commissioner Hong. Yes, some requirements, of course, are a little more of a challenge to enforce, you know, but we will certainly send, we have a group of inspectors who will follow up on any zoning violation. Regardless of the complexity of it, that's what we're required to do by town code. And so, yeah, I mean, even if it's a challenging, complex violation, we will find a way to best get out there and enforce the requirement if there is one set forth by the commission and council.
Okay, did that answer your question, Mrs. Hong or Commissioner Hong?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, great. Were there any other questions from the commissioners? No, all right. So then I will ask again if someone will put forth a motion. And could we please unmute Commissioner Bergsma?
Okay, so this is a motion in regard to the zoning code text amendment, item A. I move to recommend approval of the text amendment to the Rancho Vistoso planned area development to add farming and ranching activities, including grazing, as a conditional use to the low density residential zoning district based on the finding it is in conformance with the general plan.
All right, can I have a second for that? I will, can you unmute Vice Chair Harrington?
I'm making I second that motion.
All right. Could we please, Mrs. Ancona, can you please do a roll call vote for us? And if you could unmute all of the commissioners.
Chair Gamble?
Aye.
Vice Chair Harrington?
Aye.
Commissioner Bergsma?
Aye.
Commissioner Hurst?
Aye.
Commissioner Hong?
Aye.
Commissioner Posey?
Aye.
Commissioner Sturman?
Aye.
Motion passes 7-0.
All right, thank you. Mr. Spaeth, if you could remute everyone, and then if I could ask for a motion for item B. Would you please unmute Commissioner Bergsma?
Okay, I'll give this a try too. Again, this is in relation to approval of the conditional use permit application. I move to recommend approval of a conditional use permit allowing grazing in a portion of Stone Canyon Neighborhood 7 as depicted in Attachment 1 and subject to the conditions in Attachment 5 based on the finding it is in conformance with the zoning code, except that recommended condition of approval number 4 shall be amended to state at an average of 3 head of cattle shall graze the subject property. No more than 10 head of cattle shall graze the subject property at any given time. I'm trying to split the difference between having 3 as an average as well as a maximum and allowing for maybe a few more cattle to roam onto the property to graze without creating a non-compliant situation.
Okay, could I get a second for that? Will you unmute Vice Chair Harrington, please?
I will second that motion, Chair.
All right, thank you. Mrs. Ancona, will you please do a roll call vote for this as well? And Mr. Spaeth, can you please unmute all of the commissioners?
Okay. Chair Gamble?
Aye.
Vice Chair Harrington?
Aye.
Commissioner Bergsma?
Aye.
Commissioner Hurst? Commissioner Hurst?
Aye.
Commissioner Hong?
Aye.
Commissioner Posey?
Aye.
And Commissioner Sturman?
Aye.
Motion passes 7-0.
All right, thank you very much. I'm going to turn some time over to Mr. Spaeth for our planning division update now. Mr. Spaeth? And if you could mute everyone as well.
So mine wasn't muted, but or what in the opinion? Yeah, Chair Gamble, thank you. Upcoming meetings are on May 14th. So a week from this Thursday, we had a Zoom, same software we're using here, neighborhood meeting regarding the Vistoso Golf proposed general plan amendment and rezoning, which has obviously had a lot of interest in the community. So I would certainly encourage all commissioners to join and attend. That will be from 6 to 8 p.m. on Thursday. And then the following Thursday on May 21st, we have a Zoom neighborhood meeting for the First and Tangerine general plan amendment and rezoning that are proposed. So I would also encourage all commissioners to attend that. The next Planning and Zoning Commission is scheduled for Tuesday, June 2nd. We tentatively have four items on that agenda. We have the noise code amendment. We have a development process code amendment, and then two architecture applications, a conceptual architecture for Push Ridge Christian Academy's multi-purpose building, and then conceptual model home architecture for the Miller Ranch subdivision near La Cañada Drive and Tangerine Road. Thank you, Chair Gamble. That concludes my update.
Am I muted?
Nope, I got you. Sorry, you were.
Okay. I just wanted to give a huge thank you to the town and the staff. They have put in countless hours getting this meeting to work. I'd like to thank all of the commissioners. We've all met online doing Zoom training, so we all knew how to operate the meeting and function, and I just really appreciate everybody for all the time and effort and energy that went into making this possible. So thank you so much for that, and thank you everyone for participating. And with that, could I please have a motion to adjourn? Commissioner Bergsma?
I move that we adjourn.
Can I get a second? Commissioner second. Or Vice Chair Harrington?
Second.
Okay. All right. Motion and her meeting adjourned. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.